Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, Leon Cooperman, the outspoken investor on the economy.
I'm not calling for recession, but I'm saying that I think that the market has discounted the good news.
The Fed, college campuses, the presidential election.
In 2020, as a vote against Trump, I voted for Biden. I will not vote for Biden again. I think he's lost a step.
And so much more.
I might write on you or Joe Kernan.
Plus, the rest of today's stories that got us squawking. Investors love AI. WeWork 2.0 and Boeing facing flaws.
You know, they don't got a lot of extra ones where, hey, oh yeah, we got one here.
While we face flight delays.
There's no room for error.
It's Tuesday, February 6th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
And in stock news, take a look at this one. Palantir shares jumping sharply, close to 20%, 18% right now. Our earnings coming in at 9 cents per share. It matched estimates, revenue beating expectations, full year guidance also in line with estimates. In a letter to shareholders, CEO Alex Karp saying the company's expansion and growth have never been greater, especially in the face of unrelenting demand for large language models in the U.S. So a lot of this being driven by the world of AI. And he hinted at a little bit of this when we saw him in Davos. Meantime,
The interesting thing with this, too,
yep.
I think it was a couple $100 million in revenue. It's the first time they've ever done that, which surprised me. I didn't realize it was the first time they posted a profit like that. That's a $34 billion market cap company that is built up on this hope and this promise of what's to come. And this is the first time you're kind of getting a glimpse of that.
Always been the case. Yeah. Always been the case.
It's been love those kind that it's not based on the bottom line where it's multiple of the top line. And it's like a
$34 billion. That's why I looked up the market cap.
The multiple is, you wouldn't even.
Yep.
Now even if it was earnings, the multiple would be,
could
not explain
time,
it. But when it's just
185
revenue,
times.
Got to grow
the first
into
time that.
That
you're seeing this.
For a long time. Amazon, remember that?
Right. Same,
Meantime, potential investors in Elon Musk's new AI startup, XAI, focusing on access to the billionaire's network of companies and the early success of competitor OpenAI. That's according to a Bloomberg report that said that those two selling points feature prominently in a slide deck circulating among potential investors. Meantime, we should also just note that Elon, at least publicly thus far, has said that he's not trying to raise money for XAI. So there have been a number of reports that Bloomberg has put forth, I think one, maybe one by the FT. And in virtually all the cases, he has continued to say that he is not trying to raise outside money. So it's unclear this deck, whose deck is the deck?
Right. When was that? The door blew out. And that means inspections. And we're finally getting close to an end. The FAA and the latest Boeing crisis. The agency says it's 94%, nearly 94% of the inspections of the planes have been completed. And 135 of 144 grounded 737 MAX aircraft have returned to service now. The FAA's response will be in focus today when Administrator Mike Whitaker testifies before a House subcommittee on Capitol Hill. And you know, you get a problem with one plane and you just can watch it ripple through an airline. And, you know, they try to, you know, they don't got a lot of extra ones where, hey, oh, yeah, we got one here. But just pull that over to the gate and let people get on it. I mean, you can always check.
Yep.
Where's your plane coming from when you have a flight? It's like, okay, it's supposed to be. And you know whether it's there and then sometimes it's not there. And then it finally lands and they got to clean it and everybody's got it. But it's and if you ground a lot of planes, it wreaks havoc. Which
there's no room for error.
You had no issues.
No.
We had the issues that We're still occurring it. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, the third plane was finally airworthy.
And by the way, Katie Kramer, our producer, flew before me, right before me.
Yeah.
She got 5 hours, 6 hours of delays in the morning, and it wound up on my flight eventually.
And then you know what happens.
What?
5 hours. The lettuce is just sitting there. Or the chicken,
is
the
that
rubber
what you're
chicken,
it on?
the rubber chicken, that the polenta's just festering there, and the heat, or what?
Okay.
There's problems. Problems can occur.
Look, the bigger issue Boeing's facing at this point is the labor problems that are cropping up too. The machinists are threatening to go on strike. They've got a contract that expires in September. It's going to start negotiations in March, and we'll be watching that very closely because 10 years ago they had their pensions taken away. They didn't get very big raises, and now they want 40% raises and say that they are threatening to strike if they don't get that. So this will be more issues that Boeing's going to have to deal with before they can kind of clear the air, so to speak.
You know who errs on the side of the long tie, the most famous long tie wearer?
No.
Trump.
You ever notice this?
Trump has a long tie.
Even when they do caricatures of him, the tie is always down.
And the segue for that, folks, is that when I walked in this morning, first comment was, he said, your tie seems a little long.
Yeah,
but that's because I'm sitting
top
down.
Of the belt. No, that's too long. You got to retie it because I saw the back of it. The back of it is way up here. You can't.
No, it's past. It's past.
Barely
once
past.
Once you get past the back.
I will grant you one thing, Andrew. Long is better than short. Nothing is what. And I see people. You know who I see? I see actors. I see actors on TV that don't know how to tie a tie because they've never had a job. You know what I mean? Because they're just memorizing scripts. They finally.
Short ties usually go with short sleeve shirts.
Short skis.
Short you know sleeve what, shirts.
Yeah. Short. Right. Like the guys on The Office. Right. But if you get, you know, watch TV. Watch some of those like crime. You know, these stupid. They have no idea, and they, you know, they go in the wardrobe and they tie. Oh, yeah, that looks good. And there's like this much space between the top
of
the belt.
Not many of us have OCD.
I told you I have an OCD, right?
I'm aware.
I have tied a tie 5 times, and I've been late here from
retying the tie.
From retying a tie. And we're watching the shares of Snap. The social media company said it's going to lay off 10% of its workforce worldwide, or around 500 employees. The move comes in part to promote in-person collaboration. Snap's quarterly results are due today after the closing bell. Media. A lot of layoffs we're seeing in media.
Yep.
I saw some stuff at CNN. A lot of like people we probably have run into that I don't know how many staffers that have been told to look for some new places to go look for jobs. It's very difficult right now.
I think in the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal.
The media landscape. Is it because of the disruption from all this other stuff?
Yeah. You see strong numbers for advertising at Meta.
Have I got that right,
digital
Andrew?
Advertising in other places that are seeing huge gains, not necessarily carrying through everywhere. And a lot of places in particular that have to pay for streaming and figure out the cost.
A lot of it is the streaming.
Yeah.
And a lot of the debt, a little bit too much debt is taken on by some media companies too.
We feel bad. We do. But, you know, it's not Schadenfreude. We're happy we're okay, at least today.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up, Fed Chair Jay Powell spoke to the Normals on 60 Minutes, and we are still parsing his language on possible rate cuts.
I think the American public wants to see who Jay Powell is, what the Federal Reserve
maybe,
is.
Maybe, but we knew there's nothing
and wants
that
to hear from them.
All he did was confirm what we already knew.
Sure.
And investor Leon Cooperman. He's had a nearly 60-year market career, but he's still just a boy from the Bronx.
I was honored fairly recently by the New York Yankees. I was given the opportunity to throw out a pregame pitch. I was shocked by what I saw. A hot dog, $8.
More Squawk Pod is right after this.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC.
Up and Andrew, cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. People still grappling with what exactly Jay Powell had said during that 60 Minutes interview earlier on Sunday night. Have you seen people have now have published the transcripts of what was said? And so this idea of middle of the year, that was a voiceover in terms of what Scott Pelley had said about when this was all going to happen.
So I thought I heard Jay Powell say that.
There was a voiceover in one part that sort of led you to believe. Go online and read the transcripts.
It's worth it. I watched the interview.
It's worth it.
I watched the interview. Maybe there were two different points, or maybe the voiceover really convinced me.
Given what we've seen in the past 6 weeks, did you really need Jay Powell to say those pedestrian things on 60 Minutes to understand?
Somebody did.
I think the American public wants to see who Jay Powell is, what the Federal Reserve
maybe,
is.
Maybe, but we knew there's nothing
that to hear from them.
All he did was confirm what we already knew.
Sure, but I think that putting a face to that, making the American public understand that there is this thing that's not some kind of spooky thing behind the curtain is valuable.
Even Steve Eisman said yesterday, because they still have to keep talking down the dot plots.
I don't know. All I can say is that 70% of the U.S. economy is consumer driven. The consumer seems to be pretty strong. They still have savings. They're spending money. So, why everybody's getting so hysterical, I don't get it. Everybody should just wait. When there'll be a negative data point, we could talk about it. Until then, it seems to me the economy is just fine.
I didn't hear anything that he said that surprised me. I do think it's good to occasionally talk to the public about these things and explain where your views on inflation are when it matters so much to things like the housing market, which is way bigger than the stock market even.
I think we're
mortgages
making a lot more out of it than what actually happened, because as the numbers were much stronger than people had expected, and as the dot plots became more and more
irrelevant,
the market continued to hit new highs.
Sure.
So finally Jay Powell says something, it's down 270 points. Well, on a percentage basis, that's 0.00. That's nothing.
But
so
you did have
none of it really.
You did have 30-year mortgages trade above 7% again yesterday for the first time since December.
And a little backup in the 10-year.
Right.
To the high end of the range.
I think people aren't paying attention if you were surprised by any of this, but clearly some people weren't paying attention because it did move markets to some
little
extent.
Bit. Right. But what's more surprising is that as the economic data was stronger and stronger, the stock market continued to hit new highs.
And by the way, that interview was taped before the Friday jobs report. Much stronger than expected, too. So you add that to the mix.
But the earnings were already better than people thought. The market hit a series of new highs, and then it's backed off 270 points. Nothing.
Joining us to talk about the markets, the economy, and much more is billionaire hedge fund investor Lee Cooperman. He is Omega Family Office Chairman and CEO. And Lee, weigh in on this, because you're somebody who thought the markets were going to be troubled. You've been concerned, not that you haven't been fully invested, but you've been concerned about the future for the markets. We are sitting just off all-time highs. What do you think this year brings?
Well, everybody came into 2023 with a very negative view, and the market went up quite a bit. And everybody's now positive. And so my guess is that by the end of the year, maybe we'll go down. By the end of the year. I think the Fed will cut short rates maybe two or three times. Forget the six times that the market was discounting. But I think the long end will go up. And, prior to 2008, the 10-year government bond yielded in line with nominal GDP. If you have inflation of 2-3% and you have real growth of a couple percent, a 10-year 4-5% or higher would not be a big surprise. And I think our situation is out of control.
Our borrowing situation, you mean our borrowing situation and whether or not we'll find buyers for that debt?
We'll find buyers. When I grew up in this business, there used to be the expression crowding out and guns and butter. We have guns and butter. And I think we'll ultimately have crowding out. The government will get their money regardless of the cost. But I think the cost will be higher than people think. I know myself, given the amount of debt that we're creating out of the system, I wouldn't be a buyer of government bonds at these levels.
But you would be a buyer at a higher level.
Yeah, sure. You know, the government, you know, everything changes. Its price is the final determinant. And so I'm not saying the government can't sell its debt, but I believe that, you know, we have $1 trillion of interest expense now for the government. We have an economy that is reasonably fully employed. We're running a big deficit. When the economy is fully employed, you're supposed to have a balanced budget. And it's both political parties are responsible. You know, when President Trump was president, he was running a $1 trillion deficit in a fully employed economy, and he was arguing for negative interest rates. If you knew his balance sheet, you could appreciate why he was arguing for negative interest rates. Sure. But I would say that bottom line, when you look at everything going around in the world and you see the market multiple at 21 times, it seems too rich to me.
Even given what we've heard from companies, earnings have been coming in stronger than anticipated. A lot of companies have kind of surprised to the upside and said that they see very strong demand. You can look across a number of industries for that.
I think it's discounted in the market. You know, that's just my basic view. I'm not calling for recession, but I'm saying that I think that the market is discounted the good news. And we've put it forward. You know, let's look at it this way. It's taken $1.50 of debt to generate $1 of economic growth. You know, and look, nobody knows when stuff is going to hit the fan. I like to point out that in 1972, two civic-minded citizens by the name of Henry Fowler, former Secretary of the Treasury, a Goldman Sachs partner, and Pete Peterson were good buddies. They used to run full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, alerting the public to the evils of the budget deficit and the trade deficit. And what has happened 40 years later? We have the lowest interest rates in our lifetime. And either it doesn't matter, or one day it will matter. And I think it will matter one day.
That's what Steve Eisman said yesterday. He kind of pointed it out. You know, he can get pretty concerned about things. Yesterday, he seemed relatively laid back, didn't seem overly concerned about anything. And that was his point, that for 40 years, people who thought the debt and the deficit were going to blow up and that rates would skyrocket it as a result, it just hasn't happened yet. You think we're a lot closer to that point, though, than we have been?
Yeah, I can't pinpoint a time, but look, business cycles, every recession sows the seeds for the next recovery, and every recovery sows the seeds for the next recession. And we're far into an economic expansion. And, you know, I was honored fairly recently by the New York Yankees. I was given the opportunity to throw out a pregame pitch. I had not been to a game for many years. I was shocked by what I saw. A hot dog, $8. A bottle of water, $6. I bought my grandson a baseball cap, $56. You know, a pretzel. I grew up in the Bronx, and there used to be an old man that came around with a carriage and a laundry bag full of pretzels. 2 for a nickel. It was $13 for a pretzel. I bought a new car in 2017. I paid $54,000. I looked to replace it in 2022, $104,000, no discount. Guess what? I didn't buy a new car. I can afford it, but I don't need it. And I'd rather do something else with my money. So I think we're going to have, shrinkflation. And we've borrowed for the future. And that's why the market has done so well.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, my thought is that basically, if you look at market cycles and you ask yourself, what's a bear market? A bear market is a period of time when more stocks are declining than rising, with a decline average around 25%, and lasts for about a year. By that definition, 93% of the stocks have been through a bear market. You know, the Magnificent Seven should now look more like the Magnificent Six as Tesla falls from the crowd. But I think that there's a lot of value in certain sectors in the market, but I believe that one should have a cautious view.
When you look at the Magnificent Seven or Six or however you want to measure it up, you still have two of them that are among your top holdings. You've got Alphabet and Microsoft, but they are not among your best ideas right now. Does that mean you think they've seen their runs?
Well, I think that they're, I like to buy things that are out of favor. And I'm holding on to Alphabet and Microsoft because they're great technology companies. And that's my window to technology. You know, I can't know nearly as much as these managements of those companies know. And yes, they're pricey, but I have a much lower cost basis of a big capital gain. And I'm not looking to pay taxes in these good companies. But, you know, for new money, I'm not putting it into Alphabet and Microsoft. I'm putting new money in other things.
Yeah, you talked about some of those. Legato first lien bonds is something you've brought up with us before. That's still your best idea. You also, though, have Cigna on that list. Why Cigna?
Well, it's a 10 multiple buying back stock. They've done a very good job in running the business. And I have a general view that if I buy something that's cheap, I want the company to be in a position to buy back cheap equity to make me more right or pay me to wait. It's not a decent dividend yield, but they're buying back, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% of the company annually, and it sells at a very low multiple.
It was on the list yesterday of, yeah, of the Just 100 list. It was one of the top 10 companies. Yeah. Does that matter to you, Lee?
No. This DEI, I think, has gotten crazy a little bit. You know, I'm basically just do the right thing. And we ought to be in a world of we reward meritocracy.
You've also suspended your donations to Columbia University. That's a place that I think you've given more than $50 million to this point. What upset you? What changed your mind?
Well, the way they've handled the anti-Semitism on the campus. You know, I said this on a competitive network, but I said these college kids have shit for brains. And the truth of the matter is, I'm being very kind to them. You know, when they talk about from the river to the sea, free Palestine, some of them think they're talking about the Hudson River or the Nile River. You know, and they don't understand the only democracy in the Middle East is Israel. The only reliable ally we have in the Middle East is Israel. The only country in the Middle East that recognizes gays and lesbians, basically, and let them do what they want to do, is Israel. And yet you have gays in Palestine. They have no idea what they're saying or what they're doing. You know, Israel took the money they got from the West and did constructive things with it. You know, the Palestinians allowed Hamas to get a hold of the money and they built tunnels. So, you know, I told the president of Columbia, if you simply came out and said, you know, that the professor who praised Hamas for what they did does not speak for the university. He has tenure. We'd fire him if he didn't have tenure. And there's no room for hate speech of any kind on a campus against any religion. They didn't say that. They equivocated. And it was unacceptable to me. I think Bill Ackman's done a wonderful job at Harvard. I've done my job at Columbia. And Mark Rowan, I think, has done a very good job at Penn. You know, it is what it is, you know. The world's all screwed up.
What would it take to win back your support?
Just to act rationally. You know, the truth of the matter is, what they say is the professor did not reflect their thinking. The professor was operating on his own, and we can't terminate him because he has tenure. You know, and also, I'm a big supporter of the business school where I have my MBA, and the business school has a different view in the university.
So they could win back? I mean, what would they have to do to win you back as a donor?
Actually, there's no room for anti-Semitism on the campus. There's no room for hate of any kind. And let's open up the campus for contrary views, you know, and these kids can't shout down and eliminate anybody coming on campus that they don't particularly care for the message. You know, we have a lot of crazy things going on. There's a black conservative economist who I'm very fond of, Thomas Sowell, who says in this era of social justice, what is your fair share of what someone else has worked for? And I love that comment, you know, and that has to do with marginal tax rates, where they criticize wealthy people. I don't know why they're criticizing wealth. How do you get to be wealthy? You develop a product or service the market, the world needs, and you get rewarded. And a lot of people that have accumulated large amounts of wealth are doing constructive things with it. I work very hard, but I'm giving away all my money, 100%.
Lee, there is a pushback and a bit of a backlash to big donors everywhere, though. I think the sentiment that just because you pay for a lot doesn't mean you should get to declare how everything goes. What do you say to that? I mean, that's part of what this backlash on the universities has been.
I can only speak for myself. I don't get involved. I support people. You know, my wife and I have determined to give back all our research, 100% of what we have accumulated over the years, to those organizations and institutions that made a difference to us in our lifetime. We don't try to control anything, and we allow the people that are in charge to make the decisions. And when they go off track, we'll speak up. And when they're on track, we just go along. The thing I'm most proud of is not in the Jewish religion. Basically, we gave $50 million to send 1,000 kids to college in Newark, called Cumberland College Scholars. I gave in two tranches. The first tranche we gave 6-7 years ago. And when I gave the money, I said, look, I know the statistics. 35% of Newark High School kids go to college, only 5% graduated. I've worked too hard for that money for a 5% graduation rate. Well, the people that run the program have done a fabulous job. Twinkle Morgan, a very motivated black lady. And we had a 73% graduation rate in our first cohort. I gave him a second $25 million. So I'm trying to do my share. And, you know, it's what it is. I can't worry about what I can't control.
Hey, Lee, here we are. We've got another election coming up. Last time you said again and again and again, I'm voting my conscience, not my pocketbook. I'm voting for Biden. How'd that go for you?
I'm not right now. I would say
no, but I mean, are you glad? You glad? You think did that work out well for you? The state of the country right now and where we are right now, that in terms of Joe Biden.
I'm not happy with either one. We have two candidates running. One's bad. The other one's worse. I don't know who's bad. I don't know who's worse.
You got to pick. Lee, do you honestly not know which is worse? And actually, do this for me. If you could explicitly tell me why you think, if you believe that Biden is worse than Trump, if you could explain that.
Well, Trump has good economic ideas. His behavior is disgraceful. And I would not vote for him. I signed off on him when he became president, when he mimicked a New York Times reporter that had cerebral palsy. You learn when you're 2 or 3 or 4 years old, you don't make fun of handicapped people. And then when he dissed John McCain, a true war hero. The man has no judgment, but he understands the economy. And Biden says he's a union man. He should be for employment generally. Okay? And so in 2016, I wrote for Mitt Romney. In 2020, as a vote against Trump, I wrote for Biden. I will not vote for Biden again. I think he's lost his step. He's allowed himself to be in the pocket of the progressives, which I think are destructive parties.
Does that mean you'd vote for Trump then? You'd go back to the...
I'm going to write in. I might write in you. Or Joe
Thanks.
Wow. Who's on the top of the ticket?
I'm hoping, and it's just a hope.
No, maybe. Between me and Andrew. I'll give it to Andrew because the vice presidency is more for me, where you don't, where you really don't do
the
anything.
The Naval Observatory is a better place to live.
I don't want to. You like to work hard. I'm the vice president. I'm going to just mail it in.
Okay.
That's not the first time that's been done.
I'm running for president. Number one, I'm the exact same age as Biden. And
I had to ask you that. It's like, man, oh, man, how's that bed you made sleeping in?
I got one more for Lee, because I'm just so curious. It's an Elon Musk question, because we've been talking about him all morning. You're not a shareholder, I believe, in Tesla, but nonetheless, you follow the markets and you follow compensation programs. You've critiqued and said all sorts of things over the years about different things that we've talked about. Do you have a view of the deal that the shareholders and the board made and now what the judge in Delaware said?
I haven't followed it too closely, but he's a genius, but he's overcompensated. I quote the great Warren Buffett. He says all these boards of directors are hiring, you know, pension consultants, compensation consultants. They should go by the name of Ratchet, Ratchet, and Ratchet. You know, the compensation is excessive, but by most companies, managements get paid when they fail. That's a big battle that I have to fight as an investor. But I'm not an activist investor. You know, I'm basically a passive investor. I try to invest in companies I understand and that are reasonably valued. And I can find plenty of them because
most of the ones I get involved in have been through a bear market. You quickly set the Legato. Legato is my favorite idea. It's somewhat complex, but it's an indictment to the U.S. government. The Department of Defense allegedly has lied under oath. They basically are using the company spectrum without compensation. It really comes down to a question. Can the government take an asset that's worth $20 or $30 billion and not pay for it? And I think the answer to that is no, but I got to be patient. The bonds trade for 20 cents in a dollar, and you're having a pick coupon of 17.5%. And I think at the end of the day, I get par for the bonds. It may take 3 years, it may take a year, but it's disgraceful what's going on there.
Lee, want to thank you, as always, for being with us and for covering such a wide range of topics. It's really good to see you, Lee.
Well, it's nice to be seen, and you guys do a good job, and stay safe, stay healthy, and just hoping the country gets on the right track. I think we're just on the wrong.
Lee, if I win, do you want to be the Treasury Secretary or the Commerce? Or if we win,
Suddenly it's you? You think he?
I don't know. I was told I was the top of the ticket.
You are the top. I don't want the responsibilities of the presidency, believe me.
She's going to be the Secretary of State. We know that.
Do you want to be state?
I'm staying home.
I think she's like me. That's way too much work.
To be the Treasury Secretary or the Commerce Secretary.
Like Davos every week.
The country deserves better choices. That's my view. And Biden has done a lot of foolish things, and his support of the progressives on the left leave me very cold. I'm a centrist at heart. I believe in the progressive income tax structure. I believe rich people should pay more in taxes, and the question is how much. You know, Bernie Sanders, he's a communist. He says 90%. Elizabeth Warren says 70% wealth tax. Paul Krugman, New York Times, says 64%. I'm willing to pay 50%. I work 6 months for myself, 6 months for the government, and that's it. And I think the idea that rich people don't pay taxes is baloney.
Lee, we always appreciate talking to you and getting your perspective on all of it, and we look forward to doing it again very, very soon. Thank you.
Next.
You ready for this? You're sitting down?
I say we, you say work? Still? A new chapter for the workspace sharing company. Is embattled founder Adam Neumann coming back?
He's now pushing to buy back WeWork.
What?
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
News breaking this morning. This out of DealBook this morning. Ousted WeWork founder Adam Neumann has a new real estate company, Flow Global. But you ready for this? You're sitting down. He's now pushing for it to buy back WeWork.
What?
It's a remarkable story. Company sent a letter yesterday to the advisors to WeWork, which is now, of course, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, asking for more information from the company, saying that they've been trying to get information from the company to either buy the entire company, assets from the company, or to provide DIP financing to the company. It appears that they are being stonewalled. Perhaps even more interestingly, Adam Neumann has teamed up with Dan Loeb at Third Point to buy back WeWork. The company has about a $4 billion in face value in terms of debt that's still outstanding. The company, of course, there's a question how much money the company would be really worth. I think some estimates say it could be as low as $500 million. So we're not talking about, you know, an extraordinary amount of money. But considering at one point this was a company that at least on paper, and we should say not at least only on paper, was valued at $47 billion. It is a long way down. If you are a equity or debt shareholder or stakeholder, I should say, in WeWork, it might be frustrating to try to sell it back to him. Having said that, it does not appear that there are any other buyers for WeWork. And in fact, yesterday, if you look through some of the transcripts of what was going on at the bankruptcy court case, there's some real problems because a lot of the deals, the landlord deals, need to get renegotiated, and this company needs money. So, and nobody, is, at least thus far, has emerged to try to buy the company.
Is he saddled with the debt then, too?
Or the yes, second? Yeah, no, absolutely. No, if you buy the company out of bankruptcy, you would be saddled with that
debt. The debt and the creditors.
Well, it'll be 10 cents on the dollar, 15 cents on the dollar. So the question is, could the company try to reemerge from bankruptcy without a buyer or with a buyer?
And what would you take?
What ultimately happens.
If you owned some of the debt, I'd take a lot less than a dollar on the dollar.
Nobody's getting $4 billion. Right, they might get $500 million.
It was only on paper value. 47.
The 47 was never.
How many other companies? What company is actually valued at what it's valued? I mean, you could say that almost about anything. That doesn't make it unique.
Worth noting, the majority owner of the debt is still SoftBank.
It is.
Oh, they must love that.
Yeah.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Hey, we're all friends here.
Not that any of us have OCD.
I told you I have an OCD, right?
I'm aware.
Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, please follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And let us know what you think. We're on social media site X at Squawk CNBC. That's it. We'll meet you right back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.